From NPR News, this is News and Notes. I'm Tony Cox. Lawmakers on both sides of the political fence are having second thoughts about Bush's bailout plan. We'll take a look at how the McCain campaign is clamping down on media access to VP candidate Sarah Palin, plus Democratic VP candidate Joe Biden criticizes his own ticket's campaign ads. Here to break all of this down for us is Mary Frances Berry. She is a professor of history at the University of Pennsylvania and the former chair of the U.S. Civil Rights Commission. And Robert Trainum, he is the D.C. bureau chief for the Comcast cable network CNN. Welcome, folks.
Well,
hey, Tony.
Hello there.
I think we have a few things to talk about today. Let me set the table for you this way. Treasury Secretary Henry Paulson and Federal Reserve Chairman Ben Bernanke are pushing for the quick passage of a $700 billion federal bailout.
I believe if the credit markets are not functioning, that jobs will be lost, the unemployment rate will rise, more houses will be foreclosed upon, GDP will contract, that the economy will just not be able to recover in a normal, healthy way, no matter what other policies are taken.
That was Federal Reserve Chairman Ben Bernanke. Now, Paulson and Bernanke are running into resistance, however. Even some GOP lawmakers are now against the plan.
This massive bailout is not a solution. It is a financial socialism, and it's un-American.
How do you rationalize or justify bailing out banks and so forth that caused or the root cause of a lot of this problem?
That was Republican Senator Jim Bunning and Republican Senator Richard Shelby. So here's the question. Who wants to go first, Mary or Robert?
Ladies first.
All right. Why are lawmakers on both sides of the political spectrum resistant to this idea of the Wall Street bailout?
First of all, the polls indicate that ordinary Americans in flyover country and on Main Street are upset about it because many of them don't understand why, if people's mortgages were foreclosed and they had to declare bankruptcy and they're out of their houses, that these people seem to be benefiting. When they see the huge salaries and the stock options and all the rest of it, they get upset. So they're saying things on talk radio and everywhere else. And so the lawmakers hear this, and there's an election in November, and many of them are up for reelection. The second thing is that after having blown very hard against this and made all kinds of rhetorical statements in the Congress, in the end, they will vote for something. Simply because, one, most of them don't really understand the intricacies of what's going on anyway, and they're afraid that something worse will happen. Even if they don't understand it, anything better will happen, so that in the end, something will pass after everything is said and done.
Are you surprised,
Tony, Tony, if I can take this one step further, for those out there who do understand this, what they can't understand is why would Main Street bail out Wall Street? Why are we rewarding bad behavior? I mean, poll after poll after poll, if you take a look at some of the blogs and some of the opinion emails and so forth that I'm receiving and so forth, people get this. They understand that there are a lot of people, a lot of bad actors out there on Wall Street who did bad things. And thus in the process, why should the farmers and the teachers and the police officers and the average taxpayer out there bail these individuals out? And then thus in the process, even go one step further and give these individuals golden parachutes. And even if I can go even one step further, a lot of folks out there are saying, well, wait a minute, I pay my taxes. I paid my mortgage on time. I paid my credit cards on time. Why in the world did these people, which was no fault of their own, receive these bad loans or receive loans, rather, with bad credit when they shouldn't receive them in the first place? So a lot of people out there do understand this, and what they do understand, they don't like. And that's the main reason why a lot of lawmakers out there, both the Republican and Democrats alike, are saying, first and foremost, why are we rewarding bad behavior? And even more importantly, why should we give $700 billion to one individual, that being Hank Paulson, who's the current Secretary of Treasury, who only has about 4 months left on his job?
So this doesn't surprise you.
Wait, Tony, to take it even further, Hank Paulson has several times predicted that if step one, two, three, four that he was taking occurred, the whole crisis would be solved, and then it wasn't. So so people don't really believe what he's saying either. I'm just saying that even after all of this is true, and I agree with everything that Robert said on this for a change, that in the end, something will pass simply because all of that sky's falling language that you started with about unemployment will go up and the rivers will run and whatever will happen. The fear in the Congress will be that if we don't do anything, then something will happen. The other thing to keep in mind is
Let me jump in to say this, yes. Because I have a question whether or not – I want to direct it to you, Robert. You're not surprised at all then, obviously, that the Republican lawmakers on the Hill are blowing back against their own party's plan for the bailout, and they're doing this because they don't have faith in the plan, or they're doing it because they're trying to cover their own political backs?
Well, it's a combination of the things that you just mentioned, but if I can go one step further, philosophically, they just don't believe in this plan. This goes against every single free market conservative, or even Democrat for that matter, where it's like, why in the world are we using publicly funded taxpayer dollars to bail out private companies? We just don't do that in the company in this country. And when we do that, it's usually with the loan. We did it in the 1980s with Chrysler. We did it to a certain degree after 2001 with the airline industry. But again, those were loans. And thus, in the process, we must remember that Chrysler paid back their loan 18 months early with interest.
But Bernanke and Paulson are both saying that you're right, that this isn't the best way to do it, but that the alternative is even worse, and that the alternative is still going to fall on the backs of the taxpayers.
Well, Robert, if I may say that, in fact, what is happening is that the lending institutions are saying that they're holding us hostage in a sense. They're saying that with all of these bad mortgages and derivatives on our books, unless we can get rid of them, then credit is going to stay frozen and there won't be any credit. So the only way to do it is to get rid of them, have the government take these assets and then price them and do something with them, and then we can go on with our business and it will free up credit and we can go on. But Robert is quite right again that one way to do this is simply to make a loan to the businesses who want to take it, the lenders who want to take it, and have them pay the taxpayers back with interest, which has been done in other cases and has been done in other countries.
Let me ask the both of you this. Part of the blowback on the bailout coming from both Republicans and Democrats has to do with these 5 points, and I'd like to get your response to them. The first is that they think that the government needs to take an equity stake in some of the companies that it is helping. The bankruptcy laws should be changed so that judges can modify the mortgages of filers' primary residences. They want to curb executive compensation on the companies participating in the bailout. They want oversight over Treasury, and they want to require the government to promote sustainable home ownership through loan modifications, which is what you just were referring to. These 5 points, are they deal breakers, do you think, Robert?
I don't think they're deal breakers. I think they're very realistic expectations given the fact that we're in this mess. Look, Tony, this is a Band-Aid on a skull fracture. There are no good options out of this. The fact of the matter is that you have some of the leading academic folks as well as the financial individuals that are saying that if you do not do something, Congress, if you do not do something, the President, our financial system will collapse to the extent of 1933 during the Great Depression. So the unfortunate thing about this is, and this is why Congress is so upset, is that they're literally backed into a corner where they have to act, but all of their options are no good options.
Now, one of the things that's happening, which is making this much more difficult for Congress to act upon, is the fact that we have an election for the presidency coming up in just a matter of weeks. Both presidential nominees, Barack Obama and John McCain, have weighed in on this plan. Here's a clip from both of them.
It is wholly unreasonable to expect that American taxpayers would or should hand this administration or any administration a $700 billion blank check with absolutely no oversight or conditions, when a lack of oversight in Washington and on Wall Street is exactly what got us into this mess.
We won't solve a problem caused by poor oversight with a plan that has no oversight. Never before in the history of our nation has so much power and money been concentrated in the hands of one person, and there must be protections and oversight in place.
Mary, they sound like they agree, but do they really?
They agree that there should be a bailout simply because of what is at stake and because both campaigns have people in them who come from these lending institutions that did the dirty deeds. And in fact, they give these lending institutions give huge campaign contributions to both campaigns. And also, they don't want to be wrong about what might happen, so that they both support a bailout with the conditions. The problem is that there will getting these conditions done in a week, which is what they keep talking about, that they're going to pass a bill in a week or a few days and go home, that Robert said were good conditions, and I agree, it isn't likely to happen, and you can't figure out how to do it. The oversight part, yes, there will be some kind of oversight. But the campaigns sound like they're on the same page pretty much, with a few changes here and there, because both of them do not want to stand in the way of something that will solve the crisis, if that's possible to do.
Well, it's interesting, too, isn't it, Robert, that both of the candidates, including McCain, are pointing the fingers at the Republicans?
Well, you know, they are. And also, what's also fascinating about this whole entire conversation, Tony, is that you have three sitting United States senators that are running for national office. Obviously, Joe Biden in that mix as well. So what's even going to be even more fascinating about this whole entire conversation is whether or not they will fly back to Washington to either A, vote for this bill, or B, not to vote for it, or C, to not vote at all. And so they're in a very precarious position in and of themselves. But having said all of that, they most likely will vote for it. They will close their eyes and hold their noses and say, you know, this is the best, literally putting a lipstick on a pig, the best option that they could do given the circumstances.
This is one that Barack Obama cannot afford to vote president on. Let me just say, by the way, that a poll from ABC and the Washington Post shows that Obama has gotten a bump, about a 9-point bump, as a result of the economic crisis. What we're going to do, Robert and Mary, we're going to continue the conversation about that and some other things that are taking place on the campaign trail. But first, we have to take a break. We'll be right back. This is News and Notes. I'm Tony Cox. We're back now with Robert Trainum, the D.C. Bureau Chief for the Comcast Cable Network, CN8, and Mary Frances Berry, a professor of history at the University of Pennsylvania and the former chair of the U.S. Civil Rights Commission. Quite a good discussion we had going before the break. Let's pick it up with this, though. Warren Buffett now has joined the economic fray, dumping, maybe I shouldn't use that word, let's just say investing.
Injecting.
Injecting $5 billion into Goldman Sachs. What does this do to the conversation? Mary, you first.
Well, I think it shows that some of these companies, Goldman Sachs, gold-plated Goldman Sachs, there are companies that have assets that, and people going forward where investors think they can make a profit, and that's what Buffett is saying. It also is like the stockholders in AIG who are now suing and saying they could have gotten a better deal, not from the government, but waiting for somebody to buy the company since it had pieces. Although Buffett does say that he expects there to be a bailout and that he wants one. He didn't say what the contours were. But if these companies were to be there and not have the bailout, some of the pieces of them that are worth something, somebody would take. I mean, that basically is where we are.
Well, do you think it gives you would it give the stock market, Wall Street, Robert, a sense of security to have Warren Buffett in the mix?
When Warren Buffett speaks, the world financial community listens. And not only do they listen, they typically follow his lead. And so with Mr. Buffett investing $5 billion of Berkshire Hathaway stock into Goldman Sachs, he's basically telling the world community two things. One, I have faith in our financial system. Thus, in the process, I'm doing $5 billion or injecting $5 billion into the system. But also, two, and just as importantly, you need to follow my lead. You need to continue to do what you do, which is to listen to what I say because I think I know what I'm talking about. And what's also very interesting about this, Tony, and Mary obviously knows this as well, is that people do follow Warren Buffett's lead. But the caveat being is that when Warren Buffett made his comments this morning saying that he would invest $5 billion of Berkshire Hathaway stock, he said this saying that I'm only doing this knowing that the Congress is going to vote for the $700 billion bailout. So it was a little bit of a chicken and egg type of game that he's playing, which is somewhat psychological. And he's also talking not only to the financial world community, but he's also talking to the 535 members of Congress as well.
Absolutely. Let's move on to another topic that we have in our time that's left. Two of them, as a matter of fact. The first, both of the vice presidential candidates, one of them, Sarah Palin, Being protected by the campaign, yesterday she met with a couple of foreign leaders in an effort to bolster her foreign policy credentials. Meetings got off to a little bit of a bumpy start because news organizations were at first not allowed in, and then they threatened to boycott, and then they were allowed in. And at the same time, on the other side of the aisle, you have Joe Biden making some gaffes, some would say, criticizing his own party's campaign ads. What's going on here, Mary?
I think that at this point, the vice presidential candidates only count when it comes to the debates, any news about them. Palin obviously wanted to be able to say that she's met this one and that one and the other one. And the fact that they don't let the news organizations follow her or question her, she has nothing to lose. The McCain campaign has nothing to lose by doing that. They probably think they're better off not letting her be questioned than letting her be questioned. It's all going to come down for the VP candidates to the debates. Biden, everybody knows that Biden says whatever comes into his head a lot of the times. And sometimes it is what is called a blooper or a gaffe. I think overall he's been beneficial to the campaign out where he's been campaigning. He's a benign choice. And with him, too, it'll come down to if he makes a blooper or a gaffe like that during the debates, then it may be somewhat of a game changer. But otherwise, he's fine.
Yeah, I saw him on TV in Cincinnati today, and it really looked to me like he was sticking to the script and reading from that teleprompter very carefully. Question for you, Robert, is this. GOP says that they are more the visits of Sarah Palin with these foreign leaders. They're more designed to introduce her to folks like Henry Kissinger, who she can call on later to consult with, knowing that you can't cram foreign policy experience into a couple of weeks before an election. Do you buy that line of reasoning?
Somewhat. Look, I remember, you know, 6 months ago when Barack Obama and Hillary Clinton were in the primary duking it out, the Clinton campaign was complaining that Senator Obama was not making himself available to the press. Excuse me. The only thing that he was doing was reading from the teleprompter in front of, you know, tens of thousands of people. This is a merry-go-round that all campaigns go through. And the first thing that you want to do is do no harm. And so what you try to do is you try to limit all the incidences where the press can ask your candidate, you know, these jarring questions. I've been through, what, six presidential campaigns now, and this is a classic example. Now, juxtapose that to the Democratic side. Senator Biden is a refreshing, very approachable individual. The Obama campaign knew that when they picked him that he was someone that was going to speak his mind and that was not going to hold his tongue. Now, having said that, there's enormous, enormous refreshingness with that, as I mentioned before, but enormous risk as well. That's what we're seeing throughout the last couple of days.
All right, let me give you both the 1 minute warning because we're about to get out of here. But okay, we want to talk about the debates on Friday night. What does Barack Obama need to do, Mary? And leave time for Robert to answer his question about
Barack Obama with this economic crisis should be gaining and gaining on McCain and leading him and running away from him in the polls and everywhere else. And all he needs to do during the debate is to hold his own, be sensible, take his time. He doesn't need to do anything startling at all because he's ahead.
What does John McCain need to do, Robert Trainum?
He needs to raise expectations that he, in fact, is ready to lead on day one. He also needs to paint Senator Obama as someone that is an incredibly gifted individual but is unable to deal with the crisis at hand.
I appreciate it. Mary and Robert, thank you both. Good show.
Thank you.
That was
thank
Mary
you.
Frances Berry. She spoke with us from Morris Creative Studios in Eastham, Massachusetts. And Robert Trainum, he is the D.C. Bureau Chief for the Comcast Cable Network CN8. He joined us from Audio Post in Philadelphia. From Oprah's influence in the Middle East to a gas shortage that has crippled parts of the American Southeast, the topics on our blog, News and Views, have hit on an array of events this week. Jeffrey Bennett is the web producer for News and Notes. He joins me now with an update. Hey, Jeff.
Hey, Tony.
So, a recent New York Times article detailed Oprah Winfrey's growing influence, I should say, in Saudi Arabia, of all places. What's that about?
Well, yeah, the Oprah Show first broadcast in Saudi Arabia in November 2004. and it became an instant hit with women 25 and younger in that country, according to the Times. Now, the article reads, "In a country where the sexes are separated, Ms. Winfrey provides many young women with new ways of thinking without striking them or Saudi Arabia's ruling authorities as subversive." So, you know, Oprah, love her or hate her, is always a flashpoint for conversation. And on our blog, Jessica writes, "It's amazing to see a down-to-earth black woman from Mississippi appeal to so many different people here in the U.S. and in other countries." Another reader named Zakita Jones says, "I am awed at how fast different forms of globalization are taking off and reaching other countries." But Candace James writes, "Oprah works my last nerve. Saudi Arabia can have her."
Speaking of women's issues, another hot topic on our blog this week, women who are choosing to be single mothers. What's been the response?
Yeah, we linked to an article by blogger Kira Kraft. She wrote, "I don't need a man to have a baby. I don't need to find the one to procreate." So we asked, for women who aren't in a relationship but do want children, is going it alone, you know, is that a viable option? And one reader wrote, "Certainly. I want to be a parent, don't want to be a wife. I have the financial means, the emotional stability, so why not?" Another reader using the alias Whole9 says, "I don't believe that simply wanting a child is a sufficient reason to have one." And T. Dawn says, "If a woman decides to become a single parent, I hope she also considers that a child will want a family. Being a parent is awesome. Deciding to be a single parent with no other type of partner is selfish."
On another topic, the country's financial meltdown has moved attention away from the gas shortage, which hit parts of the Southeast this week. But our online community has been affected by it, right?
Yeah, parts of Atlanta, Georgia, and parts of Florida and areas around Nashville have been really hardest hit. And the shortage is due to supply problems after Hurricane Ike. So a reader named Dennis wrote in our blog, "I literally drove past 28 different gas stations before finding one that still had gas for sale." And a reader in Asheville, North Carolina says that cars were stretching half miles in two different directions out of that gas station. And some perspective from another reader in Kansas City, he says, "We have plenty of gas and no lines. Looks like the folks in the Southeast are getting jerked around since we also get our gas from those Houston refineries, which were hit by Ike."
Wow. Well, in the time we have left, what else is on the blog that people are talking about?
Well, Katie Couric is set to interview Sarah Palin, so we're taking folks' questions. What we want to know what they think Katie Couric should ask. We've got video interviews with singer Eric Benet and Glenn Turman, who won an Emmy over the weekend.
Yes, he did.
Yeah, we're going to revisit that video. And we have more video interviews coming up with the cast of Spike Lee's Miracle at St. Anna.
Oh, sounds like some good stuff.
Yeah.
All right, Jeffrey Bennett, thank you very much. Jeffrey Bennett is the web producer for News and Notes, joining me here in our studios at NPR West.